it ended up being a really good deal. We structured it creatively. We had already bought a few properties at this point, so we had some equity that had built up, and we were able to buy this one, creatively without coming out of pocket with any of our own money.
Whoa, let's talk about that. Tell us about how your creative financing on the deal. How'd you not come out of pocket with any money?
Welcome to the Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast. I'm your host, Josiah Smelser. The Daily Real Estate Investor Podcast is the shared journey of building a real estate investment property business from square one. Join me as we learn together how to conquer the real estate game to reach financial freedom. Together, we will learn from people in all areas of real estate and business in our personal trek towards escaping the rat race. Be you. Do the work you love. Play the long game.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode. I'm really excited today to have a couple guys I met at WealthCon 2023 here pretty recently, Colin and Joshua Condado. Colin's not Condado, Colin Davis. These guys just launched their new podcast. They're not married either. they just launched their new podcast today, Investing RN, which I'm excited about. I think this is really going to be a great show. And I'm pumped that I got to be in on the ground level of it, but I've already been on their show. That episode's not come out yet. So you'll have to subscribe to their new podcast, Investing RN. Get that out of the way first. And then look for my episode, which will be coming out here. I don't know when. Well, maybe they'll tell us. Maybe they'll give us a hint on that. But guys, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so how do you guys know each other? We'll start with that.
So Colin married my sister, and so I have become friends with him by force, and it's been great. We both like to golf. We both like my sister sometimes.
Well, like Josh says though, like we're both pretty convinced that regardless of whether or not I married his sister, he and I would have met either way.
Yeah, it was destiny for sure.
I guess Josh, you can kind of talk about how we got into real estate.
Yeah, it was kind of just the natural progression of, so Colin always attributes it to my parents. They started buying some really small single families. I guess because they're my parents, I didn't really think about it that way. They're just doing their thing, and Colin sees it and kind of sparks some interest in him. I had some family, some cousins that were doing some investing. Everybody was kind of starting it around the same time, but it didn't really spark any like fire under me until I saw what they were able to do in such a short amount of time. And then I was like, wow, I need to get on this. This is powerful. And so I don't know if we're getting to that right now, if we're going to do it in here in a little bit. But yeah, we started real estate investing, started talking about it about end of 2018, maybe 2019, and then bought our first property in early 2020.
That's awesome. So what kind of property did y'all buy in 2020?
It was a tiny single family in a really small town in Wisconsin. It was a foreclosure, bank-owned property. We were the highest and best at $35,000.
Sweet. That sounds like one of my first rental properties I got. It was a foreclosure. It was in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I went and saw this property. And I'm like, man, I think this thing's probably worth 60. And I think I got it for 30, 35. I went in there and like did a lot of the work myself, 'cause I was so nervous I was going to screw something up with the numbers. And, that property went really well compared to what could have happened with some others we've had since then, but was able to do the BRRRR strategy on that property, get that thing fixed up. It always was leased out. The tenants always paid, and then I was able to refi, get all my money back. So I think that one of the best strategies you can use when you're starting off is to buy a foreclosure and to do exactly what these guys have done. And what I did, because it lets you use the leverage of the rehab to really drive the value on the deal. And then you can do that BRRRR strategy, hopefully get most, if not all, of your capital back, and then go do more, right? And, you know, when I was doing this was like 2017, when I had my first rental property back in 2004, but I wasn't intentional about what I was doing with my real estate back then. So I was just having rental properties to try to make some money, and then I would sell them I took the money, went to grad school, got married, paid my wife's debt off, all that. So I didn't get intentional about real estate till about 2017. So that's cool. You got your first deal. So you guys are brother-in-laws. Do you guys ever think, like, I know you guys are working together now, you're starting a podcast. I actually watched some of your podcasts that just came out today, your first episode. And Josh, do you go by Joshua or Josh?
Either one's fine. Okay. Josh is easier.
So your sister is actually part of the podcast as well, right?
She is, yeah. So we have a lot of guests that have come on, and our guest interviews have been just me and Colin.
Yeah.
It's been hard enough to schedule three people together, much less like adding my sister being four.
Yeah.
So it's just us for guests, but we'll do like a round table and just kind of like a, I don't know, state of the market, whatever you want to call it. And Jennifer will be a part of all of those.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So you guys got like the family podcast going, and then you two are doing, is she a part of the investment properties and the, I know you guys have gotten into a mobile home park as well, right?
Yeah, she's recently, we have all found our roles. We've all kind of been doing this together for the last, well, I guess 3.5 years, but never really knew where we all fit in. Josh and I have very similar, I guess, strengths and weaknesses. And then recently, you know, through some ups and downs, we were kind of in a point where Jen was maybe going to work herself out of the business, but then we got into a business, we hired a business coach, and through the business coach, we did some, the Intermetrics testing, and we're able to find that Jen actually has like more of the CEO traits to actually kind of oversee things. And it was like, obviously that was exactly what Josh and I wanted to hear from
Josiah's reaction is how everybody that we talk to, his reaction is, they're like, oh, so now your sister's the boss. And that's gone over really well. That's been really easy, a really easy transition for me.
Is she your younger sister or older?
That has its own challenges. She's a little bit older.
Okay, so your show is called Investing RN. Let's talk about tell us how you got to the RN part of this. You guys are both nurses, I'm assuming?
Yeah, so I've been a nurse and RN since 2012, I believe, is when I graduated. I ended up taking the path of grad school, going to school to do anesthesia. I still currently work in the hospital a little more than half the year. Well, it's been a lot more than that, but with real estate and everything that's going on, I'm transitioning a little bit more part-time so I can put a lot more effort and time into the podcast and the real estate and everything else we're doing. But yeah, so I've been a CRNA just over 5 years, an RN 11 years or whatever that would come out to be.
Nice. What about you, Colin?
Yeah, I did ER nursing since, I guess I started in 2011, and I did it up until the end of 2021. And then since then, I've not been working as a nurse. I've just been doing property management locally in Los Angeles, and then also managing the portfolio with my wife that we own as a company in Wisconsin.
I love it. Let's talk about I know y'all mentioned when I met you at WealthCon, you guys have a mobile home park. Tell us about that deal. How'd you get into that?
Yeah, so we currently have two. We were supposed to close on our third last Friday, but there's been some delays. But by the time this airs, we should have three mobile home parks owned. So our first one, so I mentioned I have some family that does real estate investing. I have a cousin that owns a lot of mobile home parks. I'm not sure how many at this point. It's a lot, though. It's like 10 or 15. And he actually kind of sent me the lead for this one. And he's like, hey, like, this looks like a really good deal, a lot of upside. Take a look at it. And my initial thoughts like, oh, it's not good enough for you. Like, what what's going on? But no, he's just like, I don't own anything in Wisconsin. I don't know. Like, he just handed it off to us, and it ended up being a really good deal. We structured it creatively. We had already bought a few properties at this point, so we had some equity that had built up, and we were able to buy this one, creatively without coming out of pocket with any of our own money.
Whoa, let's talk about that. Tell us about how your creative financing on the deal. How'd you not come out of pocket with any money?
Yeah, so I mentioned we had built up a little equity in some other properties. So the bank funded 80% of it. And the seller agreed to carry 20% of the note. So there's 100% right there, but the bank typically won't let you just finance 100% of it without some sort of equity or skin in the game, they like to call it. So we used equity in another house that we had about 120 grand of equity in another house, and they let us use that as leverage for this other property. So purchase price of that property was 600,000. We financed it without any of our own money and without any investor money. So that's kind of like, a lot of people say they finance stuff without any other outside money, but they're using investor money. We did not do that. So we own 100% of this asset without any money out of our own pocket, which is powerful.
Yeah, there's so many people bragging about all the doors they own, and it's like, it's all done through syndications, right? Where you own a fraction of a fraction of a fraction. And, you know, there's something to be said about being the owner of what you own and not having outside parties involved. Not saying that syndication's bad. Syndication's great when you get to the right place, right? But when you're able to fully control the asset without having to deal with partners or private money or hard money or whatever it is, you know, that's great. So, how many pads is this, and how is this? I was looking at mobile home parks myself. Actually, my family owns a mobile home park, and my dad actually. But tell me about the mobile home park. Is it, how's your park structured?
So we have, like he was saying, we call it 2.5 just because the last one's still under contract. But when we close on this third one, we'll be at 63 pads. So it's a 24 is the newest one we're getting. The first one we got was a 20 pad, and the second one we got was a 19 pad. They're all tenant owned, with the exception of one of the ones in the first park we bought, and then I think there's a couple like rent-to-own contracts that we're inheriting in this new park we're getting. But we like that model of the tenant-owned homes, because it's just a lot easier to maintain. Insurance is cheaper. The first two parks we got are septic and well, and I know a lot of people say to stay away from that, and we've had some issues with it, but nothing crazy. You know, and obviously that's kind of a ticking time bomb, but I think as long as you're planning for it, it's fine. You're doing your regular maintenance and, like, you know, just kind of preparing for it. But the new one, city water and sewer, and going forward, we're probably going to go after that. I think some of that is just kind of like stepping stones. It's like, don't do city water, or don't do septic and well, but it's like, all right, well, but like this deal, had we passed on that first deal just because it was septic and well, like, we probably wouldn't be where we are today, and we wouldn't be pursuing the mobile home space, and it's an awesome space to be in right now.
Yeah. So you said you've got one that's on city water, the other two are septic.
Yeah.
How many septic systems are, like, per park? How many septics is it, like, a shared septic is like one septic tank per pad, or how does that work?
Yeah, so I believe
you're not sure.
this tells you how good we are at our due diligence, but
something the CEO handles.
Yeah, I know. We'll get her for the next one. But the first one has two septic tanks, so it's just two rows. So at either end, there's a pretty large septic tank. And then the next one has, I think, a couple as well. So they're all shared for the park. But yeah, I think it's just like two per park. On that size, that seems to be fine. And we have to empty it about once a year, and we do annual maintenance on it and everything. And so it's not a real high cost ticket. I think it's just, if you ever had to replace it, that's when you have the issues.
Mm-hmm. And I think they're different depending on where your parks are. I know Colin does most of the deal flow, but when I look at parks down in the south, it seems like there's a little more land on each mobile home park, and the septic, there's a lot more septics because of how much land is sold on the parks.
Where are these located? Are these in Wisconsin?
Currently, yeah, all three are in Wisconsin right now. Right.
So that's like really hard winters, right?
Yeah.
Josh can speak to that.
Yeah. I've read crazy stuff about owning parks in the winter with all the snow and like all that. So has that been pretty crazy?
Yeah. I mean, the winters, they're fun. That's for sure. I know when I moved here in 2018, we had lived here for less than a week, and in April we got a snow dump of 24 inches. And we moved here from Florida, so I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm looking at jobs back in Florida as soon as that happened. No, but the winters, they're pretty tough. There's 1 to 2 weeks every year where it's in the negative 10 to 20 range. But for the most part, it's not. It's I don't know. It's below freezing for like 3-4 months out of the year. And I don't know. I just get used to it. I've lived here for most of my life.
In terms of park maintenance, it's definitely an added inconvenience, I guess. I mean, it's a cost, so you have to get snow plowing. And at one of our parks, one of the tenants is our groundskeeper, and it's a pretty large property, so he does all the groundskeeping in terms of mowing. We own a beach as well on a lake, so he maintains the beach. And then in the winter, he does all the plowing, and we comp most of his rent. It's a pretty sweet deal for us because he ends up doing a lot more around the park than just that. And then at the second park we bought, we just hired like a local landscaper to handle all that stuff. So again, like if you're underwriting for it, it's not that big a deal. And then we don't own the homes, so we're not worrying about like pipes busting and that kind of stuff. And as long as the lines are buried low enough, you don't have to worry about them freezing. So it's. Knock on wood, it hasn't been an issue yet. So it's just kind of an inconvenience more than anything.
So I know you mentioned that you were doing management. Are you managing these, Colin?
Yeah. So Jen and I, we manage the whole portfolio from Los Angeles, which is, I was just talking to a buddy last night and he's like, oh yeah, so your brother-in-law manages everything in Wisconsin. I was like, no, we've managed it. And some of that came from early on. We, Josh with his income was able to provide, the money to purchase property. So as part of the arrangement, Jen and I began doing the property management. We didn't really have any experience doing it, and we've just been fumbling along over the last few years, but we've got it dialed in pretty well now. And we use a VA to kind of help with some of the the maintenance requests and leases. And then, like I mentioned, we have an on-site person in one of our parks. And we actually just this year tried using a third-party property management on the second park we bought just to see how it is, because none of us are really passionate about property management. We're doing it because we need to, but it's not like we're just like, oh, we want to manage these parks. But it does save a lot of money, because we've even seen with this new company we hired, right off the bat, it was, I think, an extra $2,500 just to get them the leases renewed. So
yeah,
it can be pricey.
Yeah, we've done self-management and then hiring someone in-house for our properties, and we've also done third party, and we found that when you self-manage, obviously you're trading your time for the money, right? But the quality of service is so much higher for your real estate. And so we have better tenants, we have better collections, our cash on cash return is better because it drives our expenses down, because we're watching things, we're more on the spot with getting things fixed before it becomes a really big problem. When you hire out a third party, even like the rock star management companies, which are hard to find, by the way, you're going to have to dig through a number to get to a really great one, but even the rock star management companies, it's not their asset. It's something they're managing for someone else. So they're not necessarily thinking like the owner while they're managing that for you. They're thinking like, well, this is our client. So like when you own it yourself, you're just going to take a higher level of pride in everything you're doing and watch things more closely. At least we have. And then when we hired someone in internally, we taught them all of our systems, and they're not a VA. We've used VAs. So I use VAs in my content creation part of my business and that kind of thing, and in my brokerage and appraisal business. But when we hired somebody internally, we had a lot better results than we did when we hired third-party management, because we were able to train them, kind of look over their shoulder, make sure they were doing what they needed to, and they had proper hands-on help with everything. So So yeah, I mean, you guys may get to a point eventually where your assets have grown to the point, your portfolio, where, you know, you guys do bring somebody else in house and you're like making sure they know what they're doing and providing quality control checks and that kind of thing. But yeah, I think it's smart you guys are managing it in house right now because it's saving money. You know, you're able to do that and make sure the quality is high on that. And then Josh is he's got the income on the other side to really get y'all qualified for stuff when you need it and that kind of thing. So So what's your goal with this podcast? What are y'all trying to do and where do you want to go with all this?
So yeah, we want to provide as much good free content as we can on the podcast. Obviously we want to bring a lot of value to nurses because that's what we are. And we've learned a lot of stuff in the last, you know, 10 years since becoming nurses. Most of what we want to teach is more financial and more investing and just being smart with money, which is not something that is provided in nursing school or even in any kind of healthcare school. That sounds funny, healthcare school. nursing school. We want to bring on guests and just give nurses examples of other nurses and other healthcare professionals and other entrepreneurs that are doing stuff outside of the hospital, because burnout is such a big issue, and if finances is the least of your concerns, then providing great quality care to people inside of the hospital is a lot more easy to do, or a lot more beneficial.
Yeah, I think you know, we benefited so much from Bigger Pockets. I think a lot of people, even as we're interviewing people, so many people reference Bigger Pockets. And you know, as we started talking about doing a podcast, we had talked about doing something in real estate, but then we just kind of saw this, like I mentioned earlier, this deficit and need for this stuff in nursing, and just kind of being able to, as nurses now, being able to target other nurses that are doing the same thing and just making it a little more relatable. We feel like we can really have an impact on that audience and grow a community that, I mean, well, to be quite honest, will benefit us as well, because even as we've been doing this, like, you know, you know, when you're running a podcast, you're bringing these people on, it's like you're learning just as much as your listeners are learning. So it's a great thing. And like, yeah, I think we just like the idea of building a community, and yeah, like this resource that will just hopefully be for others what Bigger Pockets and, you know, podcasts like yours were for us.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, a community, like, so we met at WealthCon. That's a huge community where we met some great people. I joined a mastermind group called GoBundance just over a year ago, and just being around other people that are doing really big things, it's motivating, and it helps drive you to do bigger things. And we want to bring nurses in, but really it's for anybody that wants to be a part of it. But nurses specifically, because they can see us and they can see other nurses that are doing big things. And there's more to financial literacy and financial education than just putting, you know, 2-3% away in your 401k every year.
I love it. I've got friends that are in GoBundance as well. What's been your impression of that?
Of GoBundance?
Yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's been amazing. And cool. Like when I first joined, so there's about there's about 1,000 people in there in the portion that I joined. They have different levels, but in the group that I'm in, there's about 1,000 people there. And honestly, it's everything that they offer there, it's pretty overwhelming. As I first joined, there's like calls every day and there's people doing stuff, just on a much higher level than I even want to, probably.
Right.
but it's like I said, just being next to somebody, seeing them do exactly what they're doing and getting to places that they want to be. And
yeah,
it's just motivating. It makes me want to work harder and do bigger things, have a bigger impact.
Yeah. I've considered joining GoBundance. I'm still interested in it. So that's really cool. Well, so I guess what would you tell? It's funny. My last interview, I just had semi-retired MD. I just interviewed them. I don't know if you know them, but they're big in the medical space. They have groups and they just put out a book. And anyway, they teach people how to invest, medical professionals how to invest. So you guys definitely need to connect with them. But you know, what would you tell someone that is in nursing right now, or that is in healthcare, that you know, that feels like they're getting burned out, they're stuck financially? What would be your advice to them?
I mean, I can kind of speak to that from a personal experience. I actually, buddy of mine that I worked with, I worked with him previously. He's still my golfing buddy. I keep up with him pretty regularly. And I was just talking to him recently, and, you know, he got a new job and money's decent, but he's having to pick up extra shifts, and there's not always extra shifts available. You know, and like, I don't know if I said, but he's 60. So it's like, you know, at 60 years old, you're not wanting to work 5 days a week doing 12-hour shifts. So, but he's got a nice house, and he's got, I think, a 4-bedroom house, and he lives there by himself. And I was like, dude, just house hack it, man. Like, start renting out rooms. And it's like little things like that, you know, to supplement your income. It's a slight inconvenience, but like that compared to working 2-3 extra shifts a week, like it could change your life even in the short term. So I think just there's a, in the real estate world, there's so many different ways to do things. And whether it's like, you know, you're traveling and you got a bunch of extra cash, you can invest out of state. That's what we did. But finding a way in the situation you're in to just make a small shift that could potentially, you know, open up some opportunities for you.
Definitely. And to your point also, like, as a new nurse and even as a new CRNA, I thought the only way to make a lot of money is to pick up those extra shifts. But as we all know, like, you, as soon as you stop doing that, you stop bringing in the extra income. And it's almost like a trap, because you just get so used to the extra income, you feel like you can't stop picking them up. And so, yeah, like, making some smart investments early on is probably one of the, something that we want to expose more people to.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, house hacking is, that's the way I got started in real estate investing. And I did it when I was single. And then once I was married, my wife and I bought a duplex, and we did the house hacking thing there again. That's a really great way for people out there listening right now that don't have their first property to get the snowball going, right? Because the house hack allows you to, you can put as little as 3.5% down on a primary residence, and you can get up to a fourplex doing that. So even right now, with rates being so high, people are talking about how things won't cash flow. Well, if you bought a fourplex and you lived in one unit, you rented the other three out, it'd probably cover the entire mortgage. So you're living basically mortgage free. Now you can take all that extra income, go get you another property. And you underestimate the power of the snowball effect with all this, because it'll seem like you're not making a lot of progress. Like that first property you guys bought, it was a foreclosure, $35,000. Well, you turn around when you're ready to buy your parks, and now you've got a property, a home with hundreds of thousands of dollars of equity. And I don't know if it was that one or not, but I know that one probably had equity in it as well, even if that wasn't the same property. But that's what happens with the snowball. Like, you start now, and then you turn around in 5 years, and you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of equity, or millions, depending on what you bought, and then you can unlock that equity and move in as well. And that brings me to another point, which is make sure and pay attention to your return on equity, not just your cash on cash return. And the difference is, when you buy something, like, let's say day one, when you buy something, you go in, maybe your cash on cash return is 15% or 20%. All right. But over time, you're paying down the principal, and the property is appreciating, right? So the equity is growing. So if your income is the same or just slightly higher, but the principal is much less and the appreciation has gone way up, your equity has increased dramatically, which means that same income divided by that increased equity, you're going to have a lower return on equity than you did when you bought it. And so people will make a mistake by not paying attention to their principal pay down and the appreciation, the current value of their assets. And they'll sit there with, you know, $1 million of equity in their property, and they'll be making their $1,000 a month in income. And when you get to the end of the year, you got $12,000 profit on $1 million of equity. That's not a great cash on cash return. So a return on equity. So what you want to do is, every so often, you could either refinance, pull that extra equity out and redeploy it into something else that's got a high return on equity, higher cash on cash return, or you could sell it and do a 1031 exchange into another asset. So just food for thought, you guys pay attention to the equity that's building up in these properties as you hold these properties. That's obviously a good problem to have. You got to get this snowball started first. But that's something that, you know, when we sold all our single families, moved it all into vacation rentals, that's something that we recognized was, wow, our equity's really gone crazy in these single families, and the cash on cash has not kept up with it. The rent raises has not kept up with the equity that's built up. So really, we need to sell all this stuff, move all this equity into these cabins, and then it just exploded our monthly portfolio profit. So food for thought, just think on that, all you listeners out there, as you're considering how to drive return on investment on all your properties. So Colin and Josh, this has been great. Tell me some things you've learned, like best practices or little golden nuggets of wisdom you've learned in your time investing so far that could help someone else that's an aspiring investor or that's an investor. Share some of your wisdom, maybe some mistakes you've made that you learned from.
Well, the one mistake that we've made that I actually made a second time. You learn from your mistake the first time. I did it a second time, and I really learned the second time. Get an inspection on every property. So the second property, we didn't really go into our second property too much, but we skipped an inspection because we knew it was a full rehab. And so we're like, okay, well, we're redoing everything, and we don't really need an inspection. Turns out we found there was a fire in the attic right when we went to sell it. And that was a pretty large expense that we did not plan on. And yeah, so get your inspections.
Yeah. I think, in terms of like managing properties and that type of stuff, we also made the mistake of getting a little desperate and putting a tenant in place that we that had a previous eviction. And it's like, it should have just been a red flag, like no go, whatever. But we were just like kind of desperate. The unit had been empty for a while. And, you know, of course she had some amazing story about how she was changed and everything was going to be different, and it was not. And so we ended up having to evict her, you know, like within a year, and it was a huge headache and a huge financial burden. And of course she destroyed the place on the way out. So yeah, stick to your guns. Don't be afraid. Like, you know, the loss, and it kind of goes back to the inspection. It's like, you're afraid to like lose a little money, or and actually that inspection wasn't a money thing. It was just, we had a contractor walk it. And so we thought, oh, we're good. But yeah, don't risk potentially huge losses for some small minor ones. And then in terms of like business and everything, I would say, yeah, just back to communication. I think communication is so huge. And especially if you're doing a partnership, like we hired this coach, and in a lot of ways the coach kind of saved, not saved the business, like we're gonna like fail and go under and stop being family, but like but you know, things weren't going well, and it was like, since then things have been so much better, and it was a huge investment, but it's something that we probably should have done a lot sooner, and we'd probably be in a better place now if we had. But you know, can't change that, but we're so glad we did it.
Yeah, and I would also say, like, put yourself in a room with other people that are doing a lot of things. Like, we met Josiah at WealthCon. That's a great place to start. But there's so many other, like, great either masterminds or groups or conferences that you can go to. Just start going to them, and you'll meet people, and you'll be motivated to do more things.
What are your tips on working with family and business? I know you say communication. No, that's big. But, you know, there's people out there that say, don't work with family. Don't start a business with friends. I've never agreed with that, by the way. But what have you guys learned that would help others that are thinking about, you know, going into real estate with their brother-in-law or starting a business with their wife or things like that?
I'm sure there's plenty of families where that would be the case, but you know your family dynamic, and ours, we've always been really close and really strong, and better communication would have solved all of our assumptions, and the assumptions are always worse than reality. But yeah, like you know your family dynamic. If if your family is the right partners to go along in this journey with, then do it.
Yeah. I think defining roles too, and like going through all the legal steps as if you were partnering with some random person, just because like that can eliminate a lot of the drama if you just have like a solid operating agreement, which we're still working on 3 years into it. But having a solid operating agreement that like clearly defines roles. So it's like the expectations are very clear and easy. And then it's not emotional. It's just cut and dry. It's like, hey, you were supposed to do this. You didn't do that. Like, I'm not upset. It just needs to get done. And it just takes like, yeah, the emotions and the drama out of it.
Yeah, that's great. All right. Well, tell people where they can find out more about you. And again, talk about your podcast that just came out, how people can connect with you guys.
Yeah. So we have a website, investingrn.co, and that's actually the handle for our Instagram, our business Instagram. We both have our own personal Instagrams, but that I would direct you all to there. That's so you can connect with us personally from that website and from those links.
I'm from investingrn.co, which is a good place to start. Josh's do you have to say at, or do you just say the name?
He's talking about the Instagram.
Yeah,
I think, at whatever.
Okay, so Josh is at the Lifestyle CRNA, and I'm at Colin Frump Doctor, which is cool. It's actually supposed to be from PDR, which is where I'm from, but it looks like Frump Doctor. So you'll find it.
Awesome. Well, guys, this has been great. Thanks for joining the show and sharing your story. And I'm excited to see where your podcast goes and watch it grow over time. And I'm happy to have met you guys at WealthCon. It's been fun getting to know you guys and connecting through Instagram and stuff. Y'all stay in touch. Let me know if I can help y'all in any way. And folks, thanks for tuning into the show. Make sure if you're watching this on YouTube, hit the like button and make sure you're subscribed. If you're on the audio platforms, you're missing a lot of content on YouTube. There's shorts coming out daily over there, as well as some other long form evergreen type topics. So jump over to YouTube and subscribe to that. I think you'll get more content that will help you reach your financial goals through real estate investing. Thank you for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you.